not exactly sure what to call the topic. So give me a slide. I can try and explain it in a few sentences. Basically, I was told that there was a little controversy, which I'm not going to get into, but that Dr. Rabbi Foreman had his mentoring session, and so Rabbi Sharfman made a very strong point that the guys have to know that their main purpose now is for learning, which I agree 100%, and we very, very much, you guys don't realize how many distractions or things that people ask the guys to do that we don't allow it in order that the guys should not be distracted from learning. Nonetheless, even though Rabbi Sharp is right, obviously 100%, that's the main purpose the guys are learning, we do a little bit our butts aside now. Why do we do a little bit our butts aside? So there's two reasons. First reason is because it's part of the mitzvah. And just because one's learning, one is not totally potter from every single mitzvah under the sun. Even though, you know, we dive in, there's a certain shear that apparently Rabbi Moshe gave a certain shear, whatever, that there's a certain shear that a person is supposed to do our butzitzar every day. So this person, even though he's learning, or every week, whatever, person learning is not potter. And then there's a second reason, which is that there's a reshiva held that if you're eventually going to go into our Basasaira, then you need a little, I don't know what the word practice, but you need to be, you know, you need somewhat, you know, experience in different areas. So we feel that it's very advantageous, you know, a certain amount of experience helps the guys get into our Basasaira later. But those two saras don't deny that the main focus should be on the learning for many, many reasons. But there are two reasons to do it now. So what I wanted to discuss on the second reason, really, is what skills does a person need to eventually get into an Arbat Sasaira? Or what, I don't know, skills is right the word. And therefore, what should he keep his eyes out now when he's in yeshiva? That's the topic. I happen to think it's a pretty important topic. Okay. But before I start, I got to explain the reshiva's hashgafa, because other people will get misleading. The reason why we learn now, and now I mean, you know, first 14 years out of high school, reshiva would admit to all other Rosh Hashivas, the main reason we learn is not for our Bat Zasaira. The main reason we learn is for ourselves. Because, right, I told this to many people after the Yortzeit, the hookup from Forest Hills, that Rabbi Naiman Shita mentioned there's this question that how can you have yeshivas, our Bat Zasaira, in different cities? Chofetz Chaim said not every city is mesugel for a yeshiva. And Rashiva answered by saying that that's only Yeshiva Gedolah, a base medrash, but we're not making base medrashes, we're making elementary schools, we're making cheders. And every city is mesugel for a cheder, because that's the takana of, what is it, Yeshua ben Gamla, in with the Babasra. Right. Why are we making elementary schools? So Rashiva said, because today, in today's generation, if the kid doesn't stay in base medrash, it's current that he will be a not a ben Zaira, which is not a shomer Torah mitzvah in our book, generally speaking. You know, so the ben Zaira, which is a real Eved Hashem, you know, with the right hashgaf is, that's, you know, somebody thinks if you don't have right your halachically defined as apikiris, it's pretty scary. Is very kara that if you don't stay in yeshiva, it's very doubtful that a person will have. So a person needs a strong basis of learning, nothing to do with our Bat Zasaira for himself. Even if the guy is 100% sure he's not going into our Bat Zasaira, he needs to stay in learning. We definitely hold that way. And therefore, the main purpose of learning is for yourself. But Rashiva's hashkafa was, and we said this millions of times, but I just have to say it for clarity, that he says the Maisa, the call of the hour is a tremendous need of Arbat Tzaira, because it's a generation where two things have happened simultaneously, which Kamat has never been this way in the history of Judaism, though you don't know, but in the recent history. One is that the tremendous Amaratsis in the world, tremendous need, tremendous assimilation, but the Amaratsis in every level, whether it's even in the Shrum world, Shomer Torah world, and sure in the non-Shrum world, but on every level there's a tremendous Amaratsis. Many people do not really know Torah, and there's tremendous Nisyonis, and so the tremendous need, and two, there's a tremendous, tremendous desire. There's an unbelievable use. Usually in the previous generations, those people that didn't know weren't interested. And today there's a tremendous desire. Whenever Hashem has made a Ruach Tzar, tremendous Baal Tshuva movement, and the Baal Tshuva movement is not just by the Baal Tshuva, the Baal Tshuva movement is by the Frum people too. There's a tremendous desire for Ruchnius. So that makes it very necessary and possible to do our Baal Tzaira. So Shiva held that because of those two ingredients, the call of the hour is Arbat Tzaira. He admitted that not every person can be a professional Arbat Tzaira for certain different technicalities, but he felt that even if you're not planning on being a professional Arbat Tzaira, a person has to have that what you do for your livelihood is not what you do for life. That's just your sideline, what you do for your livelihood. Right, a guy who's a plumber, he's not a plumber. He makes money by being a plumber, but he's a Ben Torah, he's whoever he is. So the Shiva held that even if you want to be a plumber or a computer programmer or an accountant to make your money, but on the sideline, your focus in life should be Arbat Tzaira, because that's the call of the hour. You have to, in some voluntary way, be involved in Arbat Tzaira. Anyway, just to conclude, so Shiva held this was that being that the call of the hour is Arbat Tzaira, and everybody, either as a volunteer or paying, has to do some form of Arbat Tzaira. So he felt that by telling people that when they're young, two things: first of all, people imbibe it, so they're more likely to do it, and two, it inspires them to learn better. Even though really you have to learn for 14 years, nothing to do with Arbat Tzaira. You have to learn 14 years for yourself. But some people, they don't hear that if they don't learn, they're going to become a Mechadel Shabbos or a not a Ben Torah. It's hard to hear that. So with this they can hear. If I don't learn, I won't be able to teach properly. So it helps motivate people to learn more. So why should you tell it them in 14 years from now when you can tell it them now and thereby motivate people to learn more? Okay, anyway, so that's the Hashkafa. So Hashkafa is that even in our beginning of our stage, even though we're not going into our Arbat Tzaira for theoretically 14 years, but through Shiva held that it's important to know it now and to begin a little bit. The Hachana is when the opportunity arrives, obviously providing it doesn't interfere with our basic learning, right? Again, I'm 100% in agreement with Rabbi Sharpe, right? Shouldn't interfere with your basic learning, but there are opportunities that don't interfere and take care of it. They come hand in hand in learning, and that's what we have to grab. Okay, finish introduction. How much did I waste in the introduction? 10 minutes. Okay. Anyway, so the topic is, what do we need to do now? What skills does a person need for Arbat Tzaira? I wrote down 10. I know, because Yeshiva had 10 honorees, and it was a very good number. The 10 pillars, it sounded good, 9 pillars. The 10 pillars of Yeshiva. So it seems that there's a special, the number 10. That's one of the things in Arbat Tzaira, you have to learn these little tricks. A certain word, right? What we got? Parak on the lawn, right? That's what we had, right? Yeah. So there's certain tricks of so the 10 is a good number when you make a list. Right? That's wrong. No, it's not on the list. Didn't make the 10. Didn't make the top 10. But okay. Anyway, so I wrote down 10 skills that are needed for our bus to start. But I think these are all real. We'll see. We'll try and go through it quickly. They're not necessarily in the order of importance, but a little bit they probably are. The first thing Rav Shiva is very, very strong about, that you can't go into Arbat Zaira unless you know strongly Torah. And meaning you know, because you know strongly what's right or what's wrong. Rav Shiva, I mean hell, I mean I think I know in the yeshiva, I got a tape recorder coming here in front of me, so I'm going to say something which is probably an exaggeration, but it's only a little bit of exaggeration. There are a lot of guys in the yeshiva that want to leave the yeshiva and become rabbanim. You know, I don't know, some people, you know, that's not the exaggeration, but there are some guys that want to become rabbanim. And they have a very big problem, because a very large percentage, could be even more than half, could be, that might be the exaggeration, but I'm not sure if it is, a very large percentage of the shuls, Orthodox shuls that exist in the country, the guys in yeshiva cannot take. Because the previous rabbi or somebody along the way who had been doing things that aren't exactly kosher al pi din, which Rishiva would hold is not, you're not allowed to do, and now, you know, you can't have a young rabbi come in and change it, because, you know, the rabbi so-and-so said it was okay. And you're stuck. And you therefore can't, and especially outside of New York, maybe Frumber, and therefore you can't take these positions. Guys have big problems. They want to be rabbanim, so a lot of them end up starting their own shuls. You'll find that a lot of the guys who became rabbanim in yeshiva started their own shuls. Because there are many shuls that guys will end up wanting to take, and then they discover they run into problems. Well, the previous rabbi did this and this. Ayvei. Now what do I do? And they just find it easier just to start a new position from scratch. Which means that many, many people who went going into chinuch have messed things up for Klal Yisrael. That's what it basically means. That as this previous rabbi, he hashkafically made certain mistakes. And he allowed or disallowed or whatever things, which now that they're ready, they put the school or the shul on a certain derech, and it's very hard. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's definitely a problem. Shiva was very, very machbid on a guy who just learned a year or two should not go into chinuch. Unless he's going in New York and he's teaching, in a school, and he's mabato himself to a principal who he can trust. But if he's going out himself somewhere where he's on his own, Shiva was eish lahava against it. There was, at one time, there was somebody who got all inspired, not from the yeshiva, who got all inspired about that there's a spiritual holocaust in America, and he started working on one of the college campuses, whatever, and giving people, giving them a certain quick course in Judaism, and then sending them out to save other people. You know, you went from a total Amoraret, a non-Trum person, to a rabbi in a year in this person's program. And the Rishiva was Eish Lahava against the person, that program. I know even there was a guy in the Rishiva that was working for it. He told him he should resign. She was very much against it, because he felt that these rabbis, not that they don't do good things, they'll do some many, many good things, but the ends don't justify the means. And also it's inevitable to make some major mistakes, because they don't know hashkafically what's right and what's wrong. There are some very difficult asks Torah shaitas come up, especially when you're out of New York. And you have to be a big time welcome to paskin them. And the guy, and even to know that they're a shaita is not so simple. And a guy who has a year or two of learning, and then he thinks he's very charismatic, and he goes out and he can be the most charismatic rabbi, and he's going to be doing amazing things. That's true, but if he doesn't have a good background in Torah, the odds are he's going to make mistakes, and that's pretty major significance problems. So she was very strong about that. He was very much against guys going out who don't have a strong backbone of knowledge. Forgetting about, you know, just knowledge. He felt if you don't know what you're doing, you know, you don't send out a doctor, even if there's a major medical emergency, you don't send out a doctor to do operations who has 1 year medical school. Because he's going to kill his patients. And even if he's going to kill only one or two patients, he can't send them out. Well, most of the people will do okay. It's just, he didn't really learn that much, so a difficult operation, he'll blow it. You can't let a doctor go out that's going to murder a certain percentage of people, even if most people do okay. So you can't send out a rabbi who is not rooted in a strong... Now, I'm not saying there are some people exceptions, that they went ahead and they have a Rebbe that they asked. But as a general shita, definitely not at a chatzpira, shiva was very much that a person before he can go out has to know. He was very big on that. Okay. Obviously, every rule has its exceptions. But in a general rule. Okay. That was number one. The second thing is very similar, is that Shiva held that you must have a very strong level of Yiras Shamayim. Because, again, you're going out, there are tremendous nisyonos as being a Marbid Saira. And if you're not ready, if you're not, you don't have a backbone of Yiras Shamayim, even if you know what's right, but you'll be given to the pressure of your nisyonos. You know, you have a school and you're... You know, I know my father told me he went out, he became a rabbi, and you know, and there was a they were trying, they had to build a new shul, and one person came forward, and he's ready to give all the money for the new shul. Everyone was thrilled, except on one condition, that the shul becomes conservative, no mechitza. So, you know, that's my father said he killed the Baal Basim. It's the shul or it's me. You know, you have a choice. And he says he was not sure who they were going to pick, because saving $1 million is a big temptation for people. Rabbi, you can get anywhere. You know, a cabin, they picked him, but he says he was quite scared. But you have to be ready to do that, to be able, you know, there's a line from Rabbi Yisrael that a rabbi who's not ready to resign is not a rabbi, you know, and a rav. You know, you have to be ready to resign, you have to be ready to stand up for what you believe in, and you need a lot of Yiras Shamayim. It isn't easy. There's, you know, many stories I could tell you. Okay. Next. The next thing is, sounds obvious, but many people don't realize it. You have guys in yeshiva who are very charismatic personalities, and they say, why do I have to stay in yeshiva 14 years? I'll go with Darbat Sasari now. Okay, so we said the first reason, but they might not have hashkafa right. But there's another reason, is Reshiva was very, very strong, and this was not a universally accepted hashkafa, that you have to know how to learn to do our batzah sire. The reason why Reshiva held that way is Reshiva had a hashkafa, which is, I say, is a little bit controversial, is he said that felt that the main way of doing our batzah sire is through Torah. He felt that there's a mystical thing, that the Jewish neshama is hungry for Torah. It's a mystical thing, not logical. And when you teach someone Torah, even though this seems to be the most ridiculous thing in the world, Shor Shenogach es Apara, it's not Nogeyev, it's Manazeh. You know, what are you learning with me? Something, it's, you know, about cows and horses and walls that falls down, and it doesn't seem to be such so relevant. And he said, that's the way you make Baal Tshuvas. Reshiva was a little bit, did not agree with NCSY, even though he held a lot of it, but he felt that they should have more learning, you know, a little less ruach and more learning, because he held that what the real backbone of Hakirah is learning. I want to make Vince, he held, you know, NCSY is a great organization, but he felt that they should even, they should do more learning, you know, because he felt that the about tshuva to last needs something, you know, something real, and just ruach and putting your hand around the guy's shoulder and rocking with him and, you know, and singing songs at dark at night can get a guy very inspired, but it not, won't necessarily last. But Torah feeds the neshama, and that's a real thing. So Rashi was very, very big. It was that that the best way to be mekarev someone, whether he's from, not from, already from, more from, is by teaching him more Torah. And obviously, the only way to teach Torah is you have to know how to learn. Even if you're teaching on an elementary school level, you have to be able to present things clearly. Kids ask questions. Please understand, even giving a person who is a lamdan will give a better shiur in fifth grade, fourth grade, I don't know what to what level, but probably down to the pretty younger levels too, than a person who's not a lamdan, because part of being a lamdan means you have clarity of thought. That's one of the skills we were talking about, being a lamdan. You can see it. You don't just get a blur, right? You see the trees. You don't get messed up because of the forest. You see things clearly. And when you see things clearly, you can present things clearly. And that is very important to teach on whatever level, right? Okay. So on whatever level you're teaching, you need clarity. He was very big on this Rosh Yeshiva, something he used to say all the time, that people think that if they're going to go out and be Arbat Sosayra and they're going to teach in elementary school, they don't have to be Lamdanim. It's not true. If you're a Lamdan, it will help you in Arbat Sosayra, even besides the fact that you're supposed to be a Lamdan for yourself. Again, the same thing we said in the beginning. You're supposed to be a Lamdan for yourself. And even if you don't need it for Arbat Sosayra, it's your own Madrega. But the Maisa, it'll help you for whatever level of us desire. Okay. We're up to number 4. I'm running. Okay, still got plenty of time. Number 4 is very, very rough. It's one of the hardest ones, and you have to figure out how to do it. You have to somehow, this is a little bit related to my Shmuz and Shabbos, you have to develop a love for people. And it's not enough a love for people, but even for that bratty kid who's not behaving, right? It's very hard, right? Going back to, I mentioned about my father had a shul, he had a very large shul. Father had a tremendous agnas nefesh from the noise in the shul. The shul was known, had a reputation of being noisy, and it was, my father was very upset because he felt it was a tremendous chiddush Hashem. People would come in, people not from anyone. He was very much wanting to mekarev them, and he felt they got turned off by the noise in the shul. And he was very, very upset. It was probably the biggest aggravation I would say he had come out in life, was that the noise in the shul that he couldn't do anything about. It was a very large shul, a few hundred people, and it was very, sociable shul, and whatever. And he used to say, I know he believed that there was one person in the shul that was a major culprit for like 50% of the noise in the shul. The guy ran the Kiddush Club, and he ran, he was a Hamish Yid who did not have any concept of not noise, and he was loud. When he's loud, he was the guy, and everyone knew it. And everyone knew it that he's the culprit. And this guy caused so much aggravation. But I happen to know, because I know, my father, he had a tremendous love for this guy. And I couldn't understand it. Like, this guy drives you crazy. Just kick him out. Okay, that's it. He's a Hamish Yid. Okay, that's what he's used to. From the out the high, whatever, I don't know, But that's a very hard thing. And when you have a teacher and you have a kid who doesn't listen to a word you say, and he's not malicious, but usually it's very rare you have a malicious kid. But he's not interested in what you say. He's not interested in learning. He can't learn. He's not interested in learning. Whatever it is. In this guy he had a different agenda than my father. My father wanted to make a shul that was a Makom Kaddish, and he was very much into making a Kiddush Club. That was his goal in life. Make a Kiddush Club. He was so proud of himself. I remember him telling us, that where he came from, Kiddush Club was a private club, and he's making it. Everybody in the whole shul is invited. It's open to the whole shul. No, and he was very proud of the fact that he's making a Kiddush Club for the whole shul, whatever. But the Maisa, so you have people have different agendas that you have. If you don't really care about people, it's much harder to be mashpia. So that's a hard one. It's a really very hard one. How do you learn to like people? Now, some teachers solve it by faking. We don't hold to that at all. We do not believe you're supposed to fake you love someone if you don't like him. You don't have to tell the guy, I don't like you. You know, you're not mechuyev to a guard against, like, you know, Kaim, I really can't stand you. But you're not supposed to fake. You're not supposed to see if Chaim was sick, and Chaim's the biggest troublemaker, and you were so thrilled that he didn't show up to class, you don't go ahead the next day and say, oh, Chaim, we missed you. We were so sorry you weren't here. Unless it's real. But if it's not real, and you really don't like him, and you're thrilled he wasn't there, you don't do that because we believe that people aren't good actors. That was Rashid used to always say, you know, you can fool the people most of the time, but not all the time. You know, he used to always say, quote that. He used to add a thing, and even if you can fool everyone, you can't fool Hashem. That was his addition. But Amai said, you can't fool most of the people, you can't fool. You think you're a good actor, people don't get fooled. And when a Rebbe or Rabbi or a Mechanic acts and he's caught lying, it undermines all his authority, and not authority, you know, people respect, is what I mean. People have no respect for someone who's dishonest, someone who's a phony, someone who's a liar. So if the Rebbe makes believe like he likes Chaim, and everybody in class knows that the Rebbe can't stand him because his body language or other things are a giveaway that he can't stand Chaim, and then the Rebbe in class makes believe like he likes him, then everyone in class says, oh, this Rebbe's a phony, and he just lost all respect of his class, and that's the end of it. Because the Rebbe that kids don't respect is not going to be a good Rebbe. I didn't put that down there, but I guess it should have been there. So the only solution really is, since you can't fake, is you have to really like him. And that's not so easy. How do you like the guy? So, but that's otherwise, you know, you can't be successful. So it's a very, very important mitzvah. Obviously, some Rebbeim have it more than others. You know, the Rashiva had it at a very high level, that he had a very, people felt a very strong love to every Talmud. Some people have it less of a level, but to some level, you gotta have it if you wanna go into chinuch. You gotta care about people, and you gotta, to some extent, love them. Otherwise, you know, no one's interested in listening to a person who doesn't care about them. Okay. Next one is pretty important, and I think we have a problem with it a little bit, and that is basic communication skills. I have to admit that there are times where guys in shir say things, and I don't have the foggiest idea what they're talking about. Sometimes. So usually, eventually, I understand. But I think there are times that people somehow do not seem to present their thoughts clearly. So apparently it's a skill. It's a skill to be able to be clear, to be, you know, to you understand yourself because you know what you want to say. But the other person doesn't understand you. How do you explain things clearly that someone who doesn't understand will understand? It seems to be a important, you know, thing that's missing. So you've got to work on that. Now, obviously, you develop that through practice. You know, but that's very, very important. Communication skills, you can't be in any form of chinuch unless you can communicate. Right? That's obvious. So, if you want to do some form of Arbat Zaira, again, either as a volunteer, you want to give a volunteer Mishnah Berurah here after davening, a volunteer a youth group, run the Pirchei, whatever it is, you have to have good talking skills. Right? Rashida has a shmooze, he took in the beginning of the Chidush Alev and the Yigash. Rashida had a shmooze that the Chazal say that the goddess of Yehuda, one of the big things they praise Yehuda, is that when he spoke to Yosef, he His presentation was beautiful. It's a chazan. It's not just his sincerity, and it's not just his mesiras nefesh, and he risked his life, and he was sincere, but he knew how to choose his words properly. There's some mashal, like a golden apple, I don't remember the mashal the chazan say. But the chazan were very good, Hashem made a shmooze out of it, there was all this sincerity and mesiras nefesh and everything else, but if he wouldn't have known how to communicate properly, beautifully, with the knowing how to say the right words at the right time with the right tone of voice, it wouldn't have had the desired effect. So communication skills of being clear, being able to inspire people, being, you know, that's very, very important. Okay, here we go. Now the next one we mentioned before, where, you know, how to get 10, so I have to keep on going. I only got 5 so far. I got to get another 5. Okay. Number six. Oh, dang, I already ran 11 o'clock. 10:30. So I have to go fast. Number six, as we mentioned this, I think, at a different time, is understanding people. It's a very, very important skill. We're talking about it today in the Musar group, is because everybody's different. And what makes you tick doesn't necessarily make the other guy tick. And you have to be able to get into, if you want to be mashpia on other people, you have to understand the person. Otherwise, you can really, 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 really blow it. You can give the guy bad advice because what's good for you is not necessarily good for him. And many people understand other people as the way they understand themselves. And that person could be a total opposite. I know the guy's a story that there was a guy, it was a Maisa Shahaya, I was there, that there was a Rebbe came to the Rosh Hashiva with a complaint. And I was her secretary. The Rebbe came with a complaint that there was another Rebbe who was working on took a certain Bachur Yeshiva under his wing as a project, and he was working on it. And this second Rebbe thought that the first Rebbe was killing him because he was working on him exactly the opposite of what he needed, because he totally misdiagnosed the Bachur, and he needs. And whatever he was doing was just the opposite of what the guy needs, because we discuss this very often, people act opposite the way they are, you know. So he felt the second Rebbe felt the first Rebbe totally misdiagnosed him, and he wanted the Reshiva to intercede to get the first Rebbe to stop, because he's killing this guy, because he's giving him the wrong medicine. Right? So, you know, that's even, and the guy was a Chasher Rebbe, but he had a Machlokes in the Rebbeim what this guy needed. Anyway, it's understanding people is very, very important. Okay. All right, number seven, I never heard this really until I came down to Florida. Anyway, maybe I hear from Dr. Foreman. He's very big on this. But he is very big on this. And that is presence. We interview teachers over the year. And a number of teachers, we had Dr. Foreman, even in New York, interview them. And his biggest thing that he X out certain people, although he's no good, is he doesn't have presence. What is presence? I don't know. I never heard the word before. But presence means that he walks into the room and he commands respect. He said the person that walks into the room and he doesn't command respect is not going to be a good, at least a classroom teacher, because he will not be able to have discipline. A person who walks in and commands respect will have discipline. Now, obviously, there are degrees. There are some people have more, some people have less. I don't say, but you know, the more presence you have, the better you'll be. Now, how do you command respect? Obviously, if you're, it happens to be the guys who are taller have it better. You know, short.